I have a couple of subjects to discuss today. The first, how did we get two rabid anti-Semite Muslim women into Congress from Minnesota and Michigan? For that, we can thank Barack Hussein Obama, the greatest booster of Islam of any U.S. president before or since. Somalia is a hotbed of radical Islam, and yet Obama ramped up immigration from there. He populated an area in Minneapolis with these Somali immigrants, and they in turn voted en masse to elect one of their own, Ilhan Omar, to Congress to represent them, not to act in the best interests of the American people. Omar has not disappointed Obama nor her Somali Muslim allies. Omar and Rashid Tlaib of Michigan lied and misled voters about their true intentions in Congress. The Bible of Islam, the Quran, teaches Muslims that it is permissible for Muslims to lie to non-believers in order to further the cause of world domination by Islam. From day one after the election, Omar and Tlaib made their true intentions known. Their hatred of Israel and their disdain for America has been on full display. Why should you be concerned? After all, it's just two Muslims. Well, Adam and Eve were the only two people in the world. Today, there are billions of people on earth. Barack Hussein Obama made it abundantly clear that one of his primary goals in his presidency was to force the United States to be less Islamophobic. A perfect way for him to do that was to ramp up immigration from majority Muslim countries. And by the end of his presidency, over 1 million green cards had been issued to Muslim immigrants, most of them from war-torn, terror-plagued regions, including Pakistan, Iraq, Iran, Egypt, and Somalia. These were mostly uneducated people who would need help from tax-paying Americans just to survive here. The million-plus Muslim immigrants only included new permanent residents. It did not include migrants on temporary non-immigrant visas, which allow foreign nationals to come to the United States temporarily for work, study, tourism, and the like. Nor did that number include all the migrants who had overstayed their visas, which reports show that the Obama administration almost entirely ignored, allowing millions to reside illegally in this country. Obama's stacking of the Somali population in the area of Minneapolis led to the election of Ilhan Omar. As Ben Weingarten of The Federalist pointed out, Omar is a Democrat from Minnesota and distinguished herself with often offensive, outrageous, and unpatriotic rhetoric. One week, she invokes classic anti-Jewish rhetoric. The next week, she trivializes the September 11 jihadist attacks on America. Another week, and she espouses anti-American views about U.S. soldiers, the very ones who fought to defend civilians in Omar's native Somalia. Ilhan Omar has said that she was treated better in a refugee camp than here in the United States. This from a woman who was elected to Congress while here in the United States. Omar's penchant for provoking millions of Americans with odious words has masked the related, equally, if not more troubling elements of her associations, ideology, and background. Consider, for example, the revelation, largely unnoticed outside of the conservative media, that As a Minnesota assemblywoman, Omar had a closed press meeting in the fall of 2017 with Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan. According to a curiously now-deleted article from the local Somalian-language periodical in her district, the Tusmo Times, she and the Islamist authoritarian president met during his UN General Assembly visit in New York. Per one account, they discussed issues involving Omar's native Somalia and issues for Somalis in Minnesota. The two discussed investment and trade between Turkey and Somalia. Omar was elected to serve the interests of America, not Somalia. The meeting ended with Erdogan asking Omar to voice her support for Turkey. A political media establishment, frenzied over foreign influence, might ask many questions about that meeting, such as, why did a state lawmaker have such a meeting? Was it appropriate for Omar to be discussing Turkish-Somali relations as an American representative? On whose behalf was Omar speaking? Did Omar have any reservations about meeting with President Erdogan, given the totalitarian, bellicose, and bigoted nature of his regime? Democrats would likely contend that U.S. leaders routinely meet with President Erdogan. Turkey is, ostensibly, a nation ally of NATO, albeit increasingly in name only. But a state assemblywoman is not a head of state or a diplomat, nor did Omar have any business speaking as a representative of the United States government. Perhaps the more troubling tie that binds President Erdogan of Turkey and Ilhan Omar is their shared affiliation with the Muslim Brotherhood. That's the tip of the Sunni jihadist spear. Erdogan has publicly defended the Muslim Brotherhood and vice versa, as he and the group share a common Sunni Islamic supremacist ideology. Erdogan's Turkey has also been an ardent supporter of Hamas, one of the Muslim Brotherhood's most notorious jihadist offshoots. The Council on American Relations, or CARE, has effectively served as the public relations arm of the Muslim Brotherhood in the United States, in part through its support of Hamas. CARE's coordination with Hamas was revealed when it was named as an unindicted co-conspirator in the largest jihad financing case in U.S. history. That was the Holy Land Foundation trial, in which several individuals were prosecuted for a scheme that resulted in millions of dollars flowing to Hamas. The long-standing links between the Muslim Brotherhood, Hamas, and CARE were detailed in legislation that designated the Brotherhood as a foreign terrorist organization. That law noted that shortly after Hamas was founded in 1987 as an outgrowth of the Muslim Brotherhood, the International Muslim Brotherhood ordered the Muslim Brotherhood chapters through the world to create Palestine committees who supported Hamas with media, money, and manpower. The U.S. Muslim Brotherhood created the United States Palestine Committee, which documents reflect was initially comprised of three organizations: the Holy Land Foundation, the Islamic Association for Palestine, and the United Association for Studies and Research. CARE was later added to these organizations. The mandate of these organizations was to support Hamas, and the Holy Land Foundation's particular role was to raise money to support Hamas's organizations inside the so-called Palestinian territories. Following the Holy Land Foundation case, the FBI swore off any more contact with CARE. On account of its ties to the Muslim Brotherhood, the United Arab Emirates classified CARE as a terrorist organization in 2014. Turkey's President Erdogan has met with senior members of CARE on multiple occasions. İlhan Omar seems to share Erdogan's affinity for the group being CARE. Her offending comments regarding the attacks of September 11, 2001, were made in front of CARE's Los Angeles chapter. She could not bring herself to admit that Muslim terrorists had killed some 3,000 Americans on 9/11. Instead, she said that some people did something on that day. İlhan Omar has been linked to the Muslim Brotherhood in other ways. In February 2019, Omar headlined an event hosted by Islamic Relief USA, whose chairman has been identified as one of the most prominent representatives of the Muslim Brotherhood in the United States. Earlier this year, Omar publicly lobbied the Trump administration via her Twitter account to press for the release of an imprisoned leader of the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood's female affiliate. Omar has as much of a chance of getting help from Donald Trump as Maxine Waters has of winning a beauty contest where she is the only contestant. Remember, İlhan Omar was elected to Congress in a district of Minnesota where Barack Hussein Obama overloaded with Somali Muslims. Obama himself is closer to the Muslim Brotherhood than Siamese twins are to each other. It was with Obama's help that the Muslim Brotherhood briefly took control of the Egyptian government before being overthrown themselves. You can see a pattern in all of this, with consistency. Consistent with Islamic supremacist groups like CARE, Omar has taken, to put it charitably, a soft line on terrorism. In a 2016 letter to a judge in which Omar pled for leniency for nine Minnesota men charged with planning to join the Islamic State, Omar went so far as to claim that, in effect, the United States is to blame for creating jihadists, even though jihadists have been around more than 1,000 years before the United States came into existence. İlhan Omar seems to have a lot of trouble with history. She recently claimed that Jesus was a Palestinian Muslim. Apparently, Omar forgot that there never was a land called Palestine and that Islam was 600 years away from existence when Jesus lived on earth. In the past, Omar has exhibited a flippant attitude towards jihadist groups like Al-Qaeda and Hezbollah, seeming to mock those Americans who were concerned with the group's violence and barbarism. In a recent appearance, İlhan Omar giggled while talking about those who were afraid of Al-Qaeda's violence. Then there's Omar's support of issues and positions shared by many of her Islamist supporters, including the anti-Semitic boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. The thinly veiled anti-Semitic propaganda Omar parrots regarding Israel. Her outright bigotry towards Jews, consistent with the pervasive anti-Semitism of her Islamist supporters. And perhaps most chillingly, Omar and her allies' attempts to stifle any criticism of her hateful rhetoric by casting herself as a victim of Islamophobic state speech that incites violence. That tactic, incidentally, has been applied to great effect in Europe by Islamists who seek to silence their critics. There is a clear nexus between Omar's associations, her words, and actions. She consorts, one might say colludes, with Islamists parrots their propaganda and advocates for their positions as a member of Congress. Consider two more troubling stories the fake news media has been completely loath to cover. Omar's oddly substantial role in the 2016 presidential elections of the highly corrupt Somalian government, in which her support for the winning candidate was followed by an appointment of her brother-in-law to a senior position on the winner's staff. And Omar's seemingly pervasive web of fraudulent, felonious activity centering on the bazaar, but sustained claim that she married her brother to get him into America. Set aside the backdrop of the last 2 years of Democratic hysteria over foreign collusion. If Ilhan Omar were to fill out standard paperwork for a national security position, which she certainly holds now, the red flags raised by information in the public domain alone in terms of her Islamic ties, links to corrupt government with which she may have engaged in a quid pro quo, and potentially compromising criminality would inundate investigators. These are material issues affecting American security, especially given Omar's seat on the House Foreign Affairs Committee. While her anti-Semitic bigotry ought to be condemned at every turn, we must also acknowledge the plethora of other problems that surround her. And we must ask ourselves a related question. Why is the political media establishment, which claims to care about foreign influence, keeping silent about Omar? Is it that Omar is colluding with the right kind of people? This seems plausible. After all, in spite of Turkey leading the world in journalists jailed over the past 3 years, President Erdogan gets to write editorials in the Washington Post. That same liberal newspaper, of course, provided a platform for the similarly Muslim Brotherhood supporting virulently anti-Zionist and anti-Semitic Jamal Khashoggi. The Washington Post is a good proxy for where the political media establishment stands on political Islam, which is where the Obama administration also stood. It is generally sympathetic, especially vis-a-vis challenging nominally anti-Islamic authoritarian regimes, especially those who stand against the Iranian regime. In a climate in which leading Democratic candidates believe convicted jihadists and other prisoners should retain the right to vote, certainly Ilhan Omar's associations and inclinations would seem to be acceptable. Or perhaps it is not so much of an issue of whom Omar is colluding with, but who Omar is, namely an avatar for the intersectionalist, America-loathing, progressive Islamic supremacist set. Omar appears to be protected by an identity politics veil. As such, she can offend millions of Americans with her words, and the left will absolve her from blame by refusing to censure her by name, then diluting even general charges against her by condemning any and all offensive rhetoric, but not Omar directly. In a post-Kavanaugh era, in which it is clear that winning trumps all else for the left, Omar can be used as a cudgel against Republicans. That's probably reason enough to ignore the serious concerns about Ilhan Omar, Rashid Tlaib, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Omar's danger is not just in her bigotry, but in the company she keeps and the ideology. It is clear she's been bathed in that ideology and continues to espouse all of it, all of which serve the detriment of American national interest. The truth is that if Omar were held to the standard of scrutiny, even remotely approximating that to which President Trump has been subjected, she would not be just thrown off of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, but forced to resign. That will not happen is a travesty. From the internet, I gleaned this. All of a sudden, before Barack Hussein Obama, there was virtually no outlandish presence of Islam in America. Think about that. All of a sudden, Islam is taught in American schools. Christianity and the Bible are banned. All of a sudden, we must stop serving pork in our prisons because it offends Muslims. We are inundated with lawsuits by Muslims who are offended by American culture. And all of a sudden, we allow burqas to be worn everywhere, even though we have no idea who or what is underneath them. And all of a sudden, we must allow prayer rugs everywhere and allow Islamic prayers in schools and airports where Christian prayer is forbidden. All of a sudden, Obama had to empty Guantanamo Bay of virtually all captured jihadists and turn them loose in jihad-friendly countries. And now, all of a sudden, we realize the progress Islam has made in America in the 8 short years of Obama. Changing subjects. Unbelievably, the Democrat Party has endorsed the killing of children even after they've been born. They feel that a mother should not be punished for deciding to have their baby murdered. That's how far this country has fallen morally. I'm not blind when it comes to abortion. I understand that it's a moral dilemma. Ann and I once had a 16-year-old neighbor who became pregnant while in high school. We were very close to the family. We remain close today. After much discussion with this single mother, the young girl decided to travel to New York for an abortion. At least she made the decision early in her pregnancy. Not that that made a difference for the innocent child in her womb. But since that time, in the early 70s, liberal progressives have pushed the envelope to the edge. They embrace abortion right up to seconds before the baby is born. Now Democrats want to take it a step further and embrace the killing of the baby even after it has been born and is a living, breathing human being. There are many reasons why abortion is evil. Chief among them is that a woman has a choice before becoming pregnant. That's when your choice comes into play. That's the time to exercise the right of choice, to ignore the methods of birth control available to women today, and then claim that it's a choice whether to take responsibility for her irresponsibility or have the baby killed is a sham. Men cannot be excused from responsibility either. But a woman not on birth control can still control whether or not to have unprotected sex. The sad truth is that America has lost its moral authority. That led to an organization called Planned Parenthood. Ironically, there is no parenthood planned by these people. On the contrary, they plan to prevent parenthood. It's the extermination of parenthood that they champion. Sadly, our tax dollars have been used to support this human butcher shop. Remember back when Democrats became outraged because information about the 9/11 waterboarding used on a handful of the world's worst terrorists came to light? That information was vital for the security of America. But Democrats found the idea terribly offensive. But there are worse tortures being perpetrated right here on U.S. soil. Tortures that make the heart sick. Tortures wildly unknown to the majority of Americans because the mainstream media largely ignores it and the lack of outrage from well-known progressive Democrats. When it came to the exposure of the torture of babies and the sale of their body parts by Planned Parenthood, search as one might, words of fiery anger from progressives, especially those who had been so quick to question the methods of the CIA toward terrorists, were difficult, if not impossible, to find. But what the Planned Parenthood videos revealed has done more by far to weaken America's moral authority than the waterboarding of terrorists. Those terrorists were not killed. The babies encountering Planned Parenthood were killed, are being killed. The revelations of Planned Parenthood's sale of body parts they culled from the murder of children means that we in the United States have no moral standing from which we can say anything about human rights in other countries. Until we get our own house in order and stop the sickening actions of America's top abortion mill, which was found to be selling harvested organs of babies, we don't have much we can say about other countries' human rights violations. For years and years, progressives, justifiably, have championed the Falun Gong. The Falun Gong, a group that is severely persecuted in China. Well-substantiated reports revealed that members of the group, Falun Gong, have been used to donate organs against their will. Peter Worthington, writing for the far-left Huffington Post, railed against China's one-child enforcement methods, actions that included kidnapping and forced abortions. She wrote, "These are beyond the imagination of Western cultures, but are in accordance with China's view of reality." Now think about this. The series of Planned Parenthood videos exposed mind-numbing atrocities, brutalities worthy of ISIS or the Nazis. American citizens were using the equivalent of poultry shears to cut through a living baby's face to harvest its brain. These progressives were discussing over wine and salad the price of baby body parts. They were advocating ways to deliver aborted babies intact, the better to harvest their kidneys, their spines, and their brains. So what right do progressives have to rebuke China for their actions, similar to those of Planned Parenthood? What moral authority does the left invoke in order to persuade China to stop harvesting organs from Falun Gong Christians and other political and religious dissidents? What belief system can be invoked in order that China be pressured to stop forced abortions as late as 8 months into a pregnancy? Especially now that progressive Democrats have endorsed the killing of innocent unborn babies beyond 8 months of pregnancy and even to seconds before birth, and now killing them after they've been born. In sum, under progressivism, America has lost its moral authority where advocacy of human rights, including the right to life, is concerned. What progressive can rail against China's human rights policies when they do not believe that the unborn child is a human being? Progressives suffer from moral paralysis. They cannot or will not revoke Planned Parenthood. If there is to be a rebuke, it must come from people who are committed to views that are the opposite of progressivism. Moral rebuke will never come from the left, which is now completely committed to the eradication of what it truly means to be a moral human being. It must come from the people of faith, Christians, Orthodox Jews, Catholics, and other conservative denominations. It would be a positive development, for instance, if the current Pope were to speak out against the barbarities of Planned Parenthood. By the way, Planned Parenthood has earmarked $50 million to spend on Democrats in the 2020 election. $50 million. All the while receiving money from the government, money you and I work for, money that the government takes in taxes. We have lost any moral authority thanks to progressivism. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week. Same time, same station.